Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Randy Harper rejoins us. Free Beastie Girl, yay! She and I are going to chat with Liz Quilty, a very important member of the open source community. You don't want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Randy Harper. Episode 208, recorded April 25th, 2012. Liz Quilty. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can get to it, almost every week, we're getting back to that again, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, projects you haven't heard about, projects you may be intimately familiar with but didn't know the behind-the-scenes stuff, lots and lots of stuff. I love doing this show. It's a great show. I have a great time chatting with all sorts of really cool people about the things that excite them about open-source and free software. So if you look at the video, you might to be just a little bleary. I was on the Rhine River cruise last week, which is why we didn't have a show. It was a 23-hour marathon to go across 9 time zones, to go from Switzerland through Amsterdam, through Minneapolis, and then back to Portland, Oregon. And then I had to drive for half an hour to get out to the place that I'm staying these days. And that only happened on Friday, so I'm still kind of a little bit, this is still like really early in the morning for me, just bizarrely early in the morning, but thank God for caffeine. Speaking of early in the morning, you are going to recognize this next voice because we have been missing her for such a long time. Randy Harper, FreeBSD Girl, welcome back to the show.
Hey, everybody. I am also really, really jet lagged, so I'm kind of in the same boat. I flew back from New York on Friday, and I was actually on my feet for 20 hours working in a conference before that, 20 hours straight. So I had 2 hours of sleep and then long, long plane trip back to the Pacific Northwest. But I'm here. I'm here, and I'm awake, and I have coffee.
Good. My God. So that means that it's a good thing we have a really remarkable guest today then to keep us awake through this show, because it sounds like we're both about ready to doze off. Caffeine kick in, please. Caffeine kick in. You know, we got to get this going, right? Before I talk about our guest, just for a second here, being FreeBSD Girl as you are, I'm actually curious. I'm going to ask you this at the end of the show, but I'm curious about this new release, the 8.3 FreeBSD release. So, get your notes together for the end of the show so you can tell me why there's an 8.3 release, okay?
All right, got it ready.
Good. All right, good. So our guest today is Liz Quilty. Now, normally we have a project, and then we have the project leader of the project. But in particular, this is a really interesting person. Randy, you actually introduced me to talking to Liz, or at least inviting the idea of talking to Liz. What made you bring Liz to have her be on the show?
Well, so I met her on Google Plus. Anyone that says Google Plus is dead is so wrong. There's this big circle there about women in tech, and somebody shared it, and I was a part of it, and she was a part of it. So we started talking, and really into Linux. She did some cool stuff with like weight loss that she has online, and I was doing the same thing. So I was talking to her about that, and we just kind of hit it off. So talking about the whole women in open source issues and Linux stuff. And she posts a lot of really awesome stuff on Google Plus. Lots of people are following her. She's a great person to follow. So I just thought she'd be, you know, interesting to have on the show, talk to her about what she's doing with Linux and about some of the more touchy political issues.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember when your first time you were on, we actually talked about some of those issues, and I like what you're saying so much. I said, well, you got to be a co-host on the show then, so we can have that looked at from time to time. So glad you're back. That's really appreciated you're back. Great. So we'll have Liz on in just a moment, but we have an important message just before that, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means you save time, money, and hassle. There are several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac or PC or iPad. I have my laptop set up in my hotel room. I'm watching Netflix all the time instead of watching the stupid TV that's in the room. You can also watch on your iPhone, which I do, and some Android phones as well. And if you have a gaming console like an Xbox 360 or a PS3 or a Nintendo Wii, you can watch Netflix right on your TV. So back in Portland, I have my PS3 hooked up to my my big screen TV, and oh, it looks beautiful on that. And if you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV with an Apple TV box or a Roku box. They're inexpensive and easy to use. I also have a Roku, so I can do the Roku stuff, and it also works great there as well. Different interface, but still works just fine. With Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of these devices. And you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and then finish on a different one. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime. Try Netflix today for 30 days for free. Go to netflix.com/twit. That's T-W-I-T. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for your free trial, netflix.com/twit. And we thank Netflix for their support of Twit and Floss Weekly, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. Having said that, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Liz Quilty, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Going well so far. I believe this is one of our record distance calls that we're actually making on for Floss Weekly. So where are you speaking to us from?
I'm from Cambridge, New Zealand. So you have to excuse the funny accent, sorry.
That's not a funny accent. It's actually a great accent. I've always appreciate people from Australia and New Zealand and how they sound different from me. And sometimes I even understand most of the words. So occasionally it works pretty well. So Randy gave a really great intro to you. Well, at least she spoke about you for a couple minutes at the beginning of the show. But why don't we sort of hear it from you? What do you want to say about yourself to kind of get us introduced to who you are?
Let me see. Hard to start. I'm really more of a Linux enthusiast, and I've been working with it probably 15, 16 years, probably more even. It's something that I kind of got into computers, and within 9 months I had Linux, and I just clicked with it, and it made it my career, and now I work with it. Fixing servers all day, every day at Remu Hosting. And, I pretty much end up helping people a lot, doing a lot of different stuff. And, where I'm coming from.
How did Linux appear to you? I mean, so you're probably working with, like, Windows machines, or maybe you actually avoided all that. How did you first get involved with Linux?
When I first got involved with computers, my sister was on IRC, which is Internet Relay Chat for the people who have never, not old school. And it was this chat thing which seemed to me really awesome and really cool. And so I wanted to do that. And so I got this old box with Windows, and somebody told me at some point, because I wanted an away thingy, download this really cool script. And I did that, and it was 8 megabyte, which in those days was just massive. And it had so many menus and so many, I couldn't figure out how to use it. So I ended up sitting in the channel to get help. And within about a month, I'd figured out most of it, and I started helping other people. So from there, I was started doing a bit of code for the Merck client. And I thought, this is pretty awesome. And I think somebody mentioned somewhere that there's this thing called Linux, and you can program the whole operating system. And that was it for me. I was like, oh, that sounds awesome. So I completely wiped my machine and broke it, and had some friends come fix it, and did that a couple times. And I even lost my password at one point and had to have somebody remotely hack me from America to restore my password, which was kind of enlightening. I realized how insecure it could be at that point, I think. And he also changed it to something rather embarrassing as well. That's pretty much how I got into using Linux, by breaking it and fixing it. And yeah.
Now, at the beginning, were you more of a user or a scripter or a programmer? And how has that changed over the years?
When I began, I think I started with Slackware. Well, no, she would have been early Red Hat, but I didn't really use Red Hat much, because at that point I couldn't really figure out what I was doing and how to do it. So I think X Windows was already configured at that point. I moved to Slackware within, I think, the first reinstall. I went to Slackware, and because that was new and cool at the time, there was, I think it was Slackware 4, I think it was. That was new and cool. And I couldn't configure X Windows. I couldn't even configure a mouse. So I used it command line for a good 6 months, I think, before I figured those out. And that in itself was hugely educational. If you can live on command line and figure out how to do everything, then it's just a really good way of finding alternate ways of doing things that you'd normally do with point and click with a mouse, you know. So, yeah.
I know that a lot of people that are using Unix or using like Linux desktop systems really haven't discovered the command line. So is there any tips you want to offer about how you got into that and maybe, you know, guides and rules or FAQs that you went to?
Yeah, I was more, I think at the time I started out going, wow, this is really cool. I can type lots of commands, and I figured out all the commands. And I then got into, I guess, the scripting side because, you know, you got a shell there, you can write lots of commands in a text file and then run those commands. And it became quite time-saving, I guess. So then I was more familiar with the command line because I started very early, within a year of getting my first computer on Linux. So, yeah.
And so do you find time then to assist other people working through this phase with the people that are around you?
Yeah, well, I joined the New Zealand Linux user group, which at that time was Auckland. And although there were a few people remotely, there really wasn't a huge amount of people on the list. And everyone would just generally help everyone out. And I was really involved with that. Go along to all the meetings, help people out. And people would help me out, which was good. And it kind of went from there to, yeah, everyone, you know, I just became a bit of a big part. And we had install fests. And, you know, there's certain people get known for being really helpful. And I think I ended up as being one of those people. And because, I mean, I quite enjoyed doing it, you see. It was, for me, I'd come from a background of a high school dropout. I had no education. I was a nobody. I'd made some poor choices. And I think at this point, suddenly I was known for my knowledge rather than my poor choices. and so it was quite good for me that I had some pride. I was like, this is really awesome. I'm really good at this. I really know this. And so it's kind of gone from there.
The story about like having very little schooling is something I hear a lot from people in open source. And I think it's because of the sense of community and the online learning, I think it's a really good place for people who have not much education to go because, you know, they can just pick something up and go with it. And it's not the same school environment. I know, like, whenever I was younger, IRC was the big thing. Did you go on IRC when you were, you know, learning how to do all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I was on Undernet. Back in those days, Undernet was kind of safe, and I was kind of person who'd like to stay safe a little bit. I did go on some of the other networks as well, though, and IRC was huge, absolutely huge. I think it was a really good way to connect with people and more to the point, learn as well. You know, you learn either the hard way or the easy way, the hard way being someone telling you to exec RM-RF something, you know, and the easy way, someone saying, hey, don't do that. So your IRC was a huge communication tool, I guess, and also more than that, it was an eye-opener. I'd only met and talked to people locally, and so I only had local viewpoints, but seeing there were other people in the world who had different priorities, different education levels, different everything, I think that was quite eye-opening as well for me.
Wow, okay. We were busy chatting in the chat room back and forth about what you're answering there. So as you're beginning to do this, so most of your communication then was, you know, over the net, and but you still had face-to-face meetings, right?
Oh, yeah, we had the LARC meetings. They were really good. And there were some meetups from IRC, but to be honest, a lot of it was over the internet. The internet itself, I think, had a large part in that, I think, for a good portion.
And what
was
it like?
Attribute IRC for my success.
Yeah. Okay. And what was it like to actually meet up with people once you You know, you may, especially what was it like to meet up with people that you'd only been chatting with?
It was a little bit daunting because I'd helped a lot of people, and to me, it was just, oh, I know the answer to that. I'll tell you the answer. Yeah, I figured this out myself, or I found a man page and worked it out. You know, and sometimes it wouldn't be easy to learn something, and you'd kind of just muddle through, or another person to help you. And so I just help other people. And when they met me, they looked up to me and they treated me with awe, as if I'd done something that was amazing and I was super cool and I was super, I'm not sure how to describe it, but as if I was someone better than I thought I was, I think, at the time. So I was more, it was a bit of a shock, actually, to be honest. It was just like, oh, why are you looking at me as if I know something, you know? And people would just start assuming that I knew everything. And I think the fact that they assumed that I knew everything, and I didn't want to challenge that assumption. I mean, I wasn't, I'm going to say, no, I'm stupid, really. So they'd go, oh, do you know how to do this? And I'd be, sure, I'll see if I can sort something out, quickly go off, look on the web, figure something out, you know, and come back to them. And they just assume I knew everything, which was a bit of a shock because, you know, going to these places and people would remember who I was and I had no idea who they were. So I think being female probably had a big deal because there wasn't a lot of females. There's still not, but I think being female meant I was more memorable to people because they remembered there's a girl who does stuff, you know?
Actually, I do want to address that in a moment, but I want to also talk about this other sort of issue. I had similar experiences that, you know, by answering questions online or being, you know, like an authority online, I got sort of different sets of respect when I went and actually physically met people. But the issue I want to address just for a moment here, because it sort of relates to this, is the idea of people going into different modes of communication and sometimes not treating as on the other side of the wire that you're actually speaking to a human being and having that result in like flame wars and things like that. Have you noticed any sort of activity like that? I'm sure you have, but what's been your experience of that sort of relationship between meeting with people online versus meeting people in person?
I think there's a lot more respect in real life than online. Online, especially back in the older days, people were quick to flame. People were quick to get into arguments. And I think in real life, it was definitely a lot easier, but there would be meetups and stuff that I'd go to that they'd just be people you just didn't talk to, you know. You just would avoid them or not talk to them, and it was that simple. I did know of some people who got physically violent or would drive over to people's places because they got banned from IRC channels, etc., or, you know, did something bad, but there was nothing much in real life so much that it, yeah, that I can think of. I didn't get out a lot. I was freshly divorced when I first got my first computer, and I had four children and I was a solo mother, basically. So I didn't really get a lot of chance to go out and meet a lot of people in real life. So for me, having the computer was a way of going out and meeting people and doing stuff without actually going out and meeting people and doing stuff. So I didn't really go out as much as other people did, but, you know, occasionally I'd go out to obviously the next meets. And obviously when the kids got later, they all came along with us. And so they've been using Linux from very young as well.
So when you were learning about Linux online and going out to these user groups and things like that, did you ever have any problems because you were female?
I don't recall any problems. I mean, in terms of, say, sexism, there probably was some, but it was more because it was an all-boys club and I just was new and didn't pay attention to it. I've never been – I mean, I grew up with boys in my neighborhood, and I was the only female pretty much in the whole street. So I grew up as a tomboy playing with all the guys. So to me, I didn't see anything different about it. I think other people probably gave me more attention because I was female. Yeah, other than that.
Yeah, I know like a lot of girls go on there, well, back in the day, back when IRC was a less civilized place, a lot of girls used to go online and they'd use like guy nicks, or they wouldn't talk about how they were female because some communities didn't really seem that friendly. Linux has always seemed pretty good. Like BSD has always been really good. But IRC, it kind of seemed like a crapshoot before. You never quite knew what you were going to get.
Yeah, I never really did that. I always used a female nick or something. Yeah, fairly. I think I was always very open about being a female, actually. In fact, I think I used that to my advantage quite a lot. Guys would not always be willing to help another guy, but they'd always be willing to help a female. It's like, especially a Linux chick, holy crap, you know. So they'd go out of their way to help you and do things, which was quite good. I guess I played the female card, and I probably got a lot more help and a lot more than, you know, say, the average guy, if that makes sense.
It's really interesting, like, hearing the whole, oh, open source is so sexist, and the feminism and open source movement. It's fascinating because they talk about how women are, like, discriminated against and all that. But when it comes to getting help, it seems like if we do one thing right, we're put on a pedestal. And we never have problems, like, getting questions answered. But if a guy came in and asked a question, they'd be all RTFM.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And RTFM was a really not a great mindset. But it was in other ways, because it taught you to learn to teach yourself rather than rely on other people for answers. So it was kind of a good mindset in some ways, but it really wasn't nice the way that people would say RTFM and not give you any hints or tips, you know. But yeah, again, girls just got away with, you can get away with more, you get more help from guys, you get more help from, so, you know, you can certainly play the female card, you know. But then again, also, you don't want to appear weak, so you want to make sure you also, you could prove that you knew stuff, because otherwise they'd be like, you're a female, you don't really know what you're doing as well. So I guess there was a little bit of both sides.
So you've been around a while. Do you, like, see this having changed in the past 10 years or so? I mean, as far as the way the communities react to people asking questions.
Absolutely. Online, the forums now are so much more helpful than they used to be. And that's good because, you know, you can often search up your problem and find the answer before you've even thought about having the problem. You know, any error message, copy paste it into Google and you'll always see people, I've got this problem. I can help you with that. Here's the thing. I think the Ubuntu forums would probably be one of the better ones. And it's not just for Ubuntu, it's for Linux in general, because they're just so open and so friendly and helpful. And there's always going to be people who are not helpful. And I think other communities are probably less helpful. But some are definitely better than others. And, you know, I mean, obviously you've still got the wild, wild west of IRC and other places, which, you know, I mean, you've got Freenode now, which we didn't really have many, many years ago. And that's probably got a bit of both the really helpful and the go read the manual type attitude. I think it's a bit of both, really, to be honest. Just depends on where you are.
It seems like we've got a lot more female supportive networks out there, too. Like, I remember I originally met you off Google+. I think somebody shared a circle, like, females in tech that you were in. And it seems like we've got all these women out there who are willing to help each other now, which is really great.
Yeah, I think it is quite good. And not only that, I think we've got a lot of men who are more supportive now, and more understanding, I think, where a woman is coming from as well in tech, which is quite good. You've still got those who just kind of have no idea and they'll just post inappropriate pictures or make inappropriate comments, and they're just really blatantly so. But I think a lot of guys are quite supportive these days of females in tech. And, you know, they still glorify us a little bit, which is kind of flattering, but it's also kind of, I guess, it's just hard to describe now.
Actually I have a couple questions around that. I know that there's this constant examination of open source communities, and they're looking at, okay, there's, you know, 70% guys, 80% guys, even up to like 95% guys, and it's like, well, how do we get more women into high tech and particularly into open source? Do you have anything to say to address that?
I'm not really sure on what that would be. Like, I think within reason, it's cultural. It's not just tech. Like, I know a lot of the people, there's a lot of feminism that goes around, and a lot of them will point the blame at, it's all the guys who treat us like this or something like that, or attitudes. But I think it's probably more society as a whole. I mean, 100 years ago, a woman's role was in the home. It wasn't, you know, guys were raised with the expectations that they would get married and they would go out to work and their wife would stay at home and look after the kids. You know, so it those attitudes have to change, and it takes a little bit of time. It takes a lot of time. Like, we're talking generations, because whilst my mother probably a lot more freedom than her mother, who, you know, and then my mother still would have raised me with a lot of values that she grew up with, and they would be also ingrained in people. Like my husband, for instance, was born and his upbringing was very, very strict. They were very religious. They were very strict. He was brought up in a way that, you know, women stayed at home, absolutely strictly stayed at home. They did nothing. They were weak. They needed help. And men were the big men who go out and they are the boss. They tell everyone what to do and everyone jumps. So, I mean, he's been re-educated, let's just say, a little bit. But I understand where he's coming from sometimes when he says something, and it's not meant in a mean or nasty way, sometimes what he's saying or doing, but it comes across that way because of his expectations and the way he was raised. And I think our children obviously are going to be different again, because they've learnt a newer and more open way to, I guess, behave and act. And in particular, my children, like, they would have been growing up knowing that girls are just as good as guys for most things. So it's not so much tech, although tech is major, because tech's been seen as a guy's domain, because it's more, it's like engineers, female engineers, say mechanics as well. It's been considered a male's domain for so many years that it's more of a cultural thing, I think, than so much something that's been intentionally deliberate for IT or anything like that. And I think especially there's been a lot of feminism, which is really good in respect that they explain to guys how and what they're doing wrong, which is awesome. It's great, because sometimes the guys don't actually realize this until you've made it clear and say, look, well, actually, I feel like this when you say this. But then again, there's also feminism who's gone way over the line there, and they've just said, and, you know, they'll just jump down a guy's throat for anything. Don't give him a chance. Don't try and explain to him what he's done and how he's done it wrong, and give him the chance to, you know, to sort it out. And then there's those guys who just don't want to learn anyway.
You stumbled on three different topics here, so let me make sure that I can pull this apart so I can follow what you're saying. So the first I want to address, according to my notes here, is that you're looking, so in your observation, you're seeing that the open source community ratios are actually fairly appropriately mimicking the, say, just technology ratios in commercial software or anywhere else. It's really sort of just a reflection of the way it is in the rest of the world then.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've got no stats to back me up. I could be completely wrong, and I'm happy to be proven otherwise. But, I mean, I think it's just time, a matter of time, more than anything else, before more females get into tech. I mean, they're already working their way towards that, but it's still ultimately seen as, a male's domain.
I want to address that too. The second issue that I also wanted to bring up, is which you brought up earlier, was that we are actually shifting as a culture to, you know, 100 years ago, male dominated, male breadwinner, female stayed at home, takes care of the kids, and that's all they do, to where we're having a lot more equality. And a lot of what I'm hearing in terms of complaints about the mismatch ratios is just sort of the tail end of that we are still in a culture where having, you know, female engineers, female IT people there's a latent stuff from back in the old days, and it's still sort of influencing some of that conversation. And is that an accurate representation of what you're trying to say there?
Yep.
Okay. And the third point, though,
Good.
Okay. The third point I want to address, which I think is actually much more fundamental, is that I don't want to say there's anything inherent in men and women, because I'll get flamed for this, but as a broad sweeping stroke, most men I know think of things in terms of outcomes. So we're trying to get from here to there. What are the steps to get there? Oh, that step failed. Fix it now. Oh, this step has three choices. Which is the best of this? And it's all about the outcomes. Whereas most women, again, broad strokes, lots of exceptions, are more about how are we connecting to get there? How are we working together? And, oh, well, that failed. Well, I'm sorry about that. That failed. What can we do to get you back on your feet and get it going again? And it is a different strategy, and as a fundamental sort of difference there. And I don't think most men are aware of this. I really don't think most men are aware. And I'd say also a slighter, maybe less degree, most women aren't aware of it on the other side, so they don't understand us as much either. Is that, am I way off base, or does that sound fair?
I'm not too sure. I think it just depends on the person, really.
Sure.
I do wonder if women in IT perhaps think differently to other women. I don't know. I mean, I grew up with guys in a very male orientated, you know, everything, you just do it. You do it with your hands. I was very hands-on with everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I think differently to other women or not, or about how that works. Usually for me, I'm just my eyes on the goal as well, to be honest. And the outcome is correct, then it's not always the process so much to get there.
Well, you know, and actually, if I can give you feedback on that, if that is your way of thinking, I'd have to say you are a bit unusual, and that may actually attribute to some of your success and why for this issue, it's not really much of an issue for you and why it might be an issue for other people.
Yeah, you could be. It could be. I mean, I don't know. I don't spend a lot of time, to be honest, thinking what other people are doing or how they're doing it, to be honest. My life is this. I'm doing this. but I think I see what you mean. I've got guys at work who are actually like that, though, more so than the females. So I don't know. I mean, they're very girly guys. I don't know.
Okay, so right. Sorry, we're busy chatting back and forth again. I got to stop doing that. I'm actually chatting with Randy behind the scenes to kind of figure out. Well, what did she mean by that? And did I do okay? Okay.
So I've got everything else closed, so I don't see the chat and don't get confused and sidetracked.
You don't see this chat at all. This is a very private chat between me and Randy about what's going on with the show. So maybe my assessments are a little bit off, but I would say. You seem to have progressed through and succeeded in an area that I know I'm hearing complaints from other women about. Maybe that's sort of the question I'm asking here. And what would you say to them that are saying this is so biased and so irresponsible and we just, you know, guys are just inherently not going to let us in their clubs and stuff? I mean, can you speak to that? Is there anything we can do to help them understand what to do next?
I can't speak for other people. I can only speak based on my experiences. And whilst, yes, there's definitely a boys club kind of attitude, or has been, not so much now as it was before. Mm-hmm. I think it's no more than just a guys treat guys. Most of the guys just treat me like one of the guys. They don't particularly say or do anything that's something that they wouldn't like. Yes, so they say inappropriate things and they say other things, but it's something that they would say or do with their mates as well. It's not because I'm a female. It's just they're treating me as if I'm one of the guys. And I'm not sure if that's my attitude because I've always been one of the guys or something else. But I mean, I've never really had there's always flame wars. There's always all the same same kind of thing as happens, but that happens also within guys as well. It's not specific to just women. I don't think I've been treated any different as a female than, say, a guy would have treated another guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. One of the things I've noticed myself, and tell me if you've seen other things, but the people that we often see, you know, being sexist and making those comments, I don't really consider them sexist because I see them being jerks to everyone. They're just jerks. And, I mean, have you seen other than that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. It's exactly that. It's just people being jerks. People are being pain in the butt or ass to everyone. They're just, so I'm going to botch my language here. but people who are being just jerks, they're jerks with everybody. And I don't think it's specific to just me being a female. I think it's just them being a jerk and they're a jerk to everyone as well, or a lot of people. You know, there are just some people you just can't deal with, and there are people that you can, you know. But generally speaking, I don't think I've worked any harder to get to where I am than any male in the same industry or any of the guys. In fact, I've applied for jobs before at the same time as my husband's applied for a job, and we've applied for the same job, not realizing this was before we were married. And whilst we were dating, we both applied for the same job without realizing I got the interview and the job eventually. And when I asked in the end, why did I get the job over him? He didn't even get a call back. And apparently it was nothing to do with my sex at all. It was related purely to the fact that I'd done a lot of work for free in the Linux area, and he wanted someone who he thought was more enthusiastic and enjoying what they were doing than someone who just had qualifications at university, because he wanted someone who really loved what they were doing and enjoying what they're doing. And so, yeah, that was quite interesting, because I assumed at the time, I thought, oh, maybe it's because I'm a girl that I got it. But not related at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like people are actually, like, they're so worried about being politically correct all the time. Like, you actually sent me a Google Plus thread a little while ago about the XKCD t-shirt. Do you want to explain that?
Oh, yeah, the old, I think Trindy, she's another female who's in Linux. She had a thread which she had seen someone wearing the XKCD logo on a t-shirt. It says, make me a sandwich. And the other guy says, no. And he goes, Sulu, make me a sandwich. And he goes, okay. And it's a great comic. It's been around since, I think, 2007. And I even have that shirt myself. But apparently what happened was someone was wearing this shirt and someone else pointed out and said, that's sexist. And I think there was quite a bit of discussion. She posted it and said, is this sexist? Because I didn't think it was. And I think there was a huge amount of people, and we looked at it. And if you look at the characters, there's, I'll even see, you even got it up there, excellent. There's no gender implied or said anywhere in the actual. And there are interesting arguments. One person said that was actually sexist because they perceived it to be a joke about gender, like cook me some eggs. And so therefore, without, they said it is sexist unless you put on a dress or and identify what sex those characters are, and therefore is sexist because you didn't identify what those characters are, which I thought was a little bit crazy, to be honest. But I see where they're coming from, because they're seeing it from the point of, and I said, so my opinion on that was that perhaps they were sexist in regards to their thoughts, because they were putting a sex onto those characters automatically without, you know, to me, I just saw two characters. I didn't see it as a male or female at all, but there were some really interesting viewpoints that were in that thread about it.
Yeah, it's funny. When I looked at it, I didn't really think it was a female either. I mean, I just viewed it as being two stick figures, right? And everybody else was trying
stick figures.
Say, oh, that's a girl. And it is sexist to think that, you know? It's funny to me that both of us don't see it that way. And it's mostly guys. It's guys that are calling this out and saying, you can't have that. And it's the girls that are coming back and saying, no, that's not sexist. I think Trindy, she said the same thing, if I'm...
I think 90% of the people on the thread said, you've got to be joking, that's not sexist. I think there were one or two who said it might be otherwise. But majority of people were in agreement that it's not really sexist at all. It's just a stick figure cartoon.
It was all the guys. It was the guys that were saying that it was sexist. And, I mean, it goes back to the whole, everyone tries so hard to be politically correct all the time. Because I think a couple of people who weren't trying to be sexist, but they made, like, you know, a few funny jokes one time and it got blown out of the water with open letters and, you know, people screaming.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so now it's like everyone is so scared. And do you see that, like, affecting you that much? I mean, do you think people are worried about talking to you, worried that, you know, you might call them on being sexist?
There have been times where people that I've worked for have looked at hiring certain people who are female, and my thought was, wow, awesome, a female who's in the same kind of area as I am, this would be great. And after having seen blog posts and other things by these same people, they've looked and they've said, well, maybe don't really want this person, because they seem to be pointing the finger and calling sexist at just any old thing, because, you know, it gets media, it gets attention, it raises awareness. And I understand that they're trying to raise awareness and change things. It's great. They're not wrong. And a lot of the times they do call it, you know, 90% of the time. But there are these few fringe people who are they're making it, I think, making it worse for everybody because they're calling sexist on things that really just aren't. They're just having a joke. I think sometimes a joke is okay. You know, we always laugh at ourselves. We laugh at other people. And that's the whole idea of a joke, is that you're having a laugh at something. And sometimes that's just a joke and people need to understand it's just a joke, you know. But when you, you know, when you have to, you can't hire someone because you're actually seriously worried they're going to bring, you know, something against you, like some kind, you know, take you to court for making a joke about something, you know. We'll often make jokes at work and they're not, sometimes they're sexual of a nature, you know, but the thing is they're all jokes. There's one of my co-workers who's currently having problems getting his visa to stay in the country. He wants to move here permanently. And we've been joking for weeks now about how he's going to marry his our other co-worker, who's another male, you know, in a civil union because he can get residency. They've been living together for years, you know, and it's just a joke. But had that been with a female, would that have been appropriate or not? Would that have been seen as sexist or not? And that's where do you draw the line? That's the thing.
You know, and but going back to the pseudo thing for a second, the first time I ever saw it, the takeaway was instantly laughable because it reflects every time I've forgotten to be in pseudo when I needed to do some command. You know, because you type a command, it goes no. Yep. And then you go, oh, right, pseudo that command. It was just perfect on that. It is a computer geek joke. If you try to take it outside the line of command line sysadmin, it doesn't, maybe they don't have that experience. So they have to go, what is this really saying? Is this, there's some magical command that lets me order people around? Because that's yeah. another way to take away if you don't know the whole stupid thing about pseudo. True. And so yeah. I can see how that can be projected. So go ahead.
Well, one of the people who thought it was sexist based it on the fact that since that cartoon had come out, and as far as I did a quick Google, and as far as I can tell, XKCD was the one who wrote it. Mm-hmm. Since that, it's been taken away and put into a sexist context multiple times by men talking to girls saying, make me a sandwich, go make me a sandwich. And that was their theory, that it was sexist based on that. So because of things that were said afterwards or outside of it, that was one of the reasons they thought it was sexist, because of everything that had been said afterwards. And I said, but I tried to make the point that, you know, if this was created first and this was not sexist, just because someone's made it into something sexist later on does not make the original product sexist, or does it, you know? That's the question. Does it somehow suddenly become sexist because someone made a joke about it?
I'm pretty sure Randall Monroe is the XKCD guy is kind of like wringing his hands at this, trying to figure out, what do they do with my creation? They made it all kind of weird now, you know. But I want to also address another point you brought up just towards the end of the conversation with Randy there. I have spent a lot of time helping people online, and every once in a while, I get into this weird sort of side conversation with somebody where I'll say something. Well, let me back up for a second. All conversation is within context. In other words, if I'm talking to you, we have a shared background, we have some representation of each other in each of our minds about where they're at right now and what I can say and how that'll affect you and what you can say and how that'll affect me. We have some sort of model that we work from all the time. We obviously don't know really what you're thinking and what I'm thinking, but we kind of work through that. And sometimes when I help people, I'm very curt. I go, you need to flip this switch on and turn that to there. And or you need to go read this part of this manual because I'm sure it'll really help you. And this is done completely with compassion, completely with trying to have the person move forward in the most effective way that I can say in a few sentences. But I'll get flamed from the side for not hand-holding more or saying it in a tone that comes across wrong or something like that. And it'll come up with this. This happened on Pearl Monks at least a dozen times. And so there'll be this long side thread about people defending me, people defending him, people going crazy with this whole thing. But ultimately, I'll say, wait a second. Let's ask the person I addressed this to whether they felt offended or helped. And invariably, every single time, I've got to say this because it's just important to me, they have said, no, that was exactly the right comment. It forwarded me as I needed to be done. And this is silly. Exactly. There's this weird sort of side projection that people do. They'll put themselves into what they think the person was experiencing. And that's not what I was thinking they were experiencing. So I was speaking to my impression of them. And I'm pretty good at reading people that way. And they're coming at it from the side, and they don't get that this doesn't work. So I have a real sense of this in terms of being a helper person, trying to help things out. And I'm guessing that a lot of this is also going on about the people who are arguing sexism, lack of respect for women and stuff in open source, is that people are protecting other people on behalf of them, when in fact, if you actually looked at the actual circumstances, people can fend for themselves. People are not fragile.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also you need to take into account the fact that everyone's working from a different set of life experiences. I mean, I grew up in New Zealand. We're very straight up. Everyone says what they think and does. There's not so much, I think, in other cultures, there's certainly a lot more pretense of politeness. And it depends on, like, say, if you grew up in the crappiest part of town versus if you grew up in a upper class environment, how you would deal with the same situation would be completely different. You know, someone from the lower class would just say, I'll just do that. And it'd be, you know, I'm not saying that you're a lower class or anything, but versus someone upper class might take you through a lot of formalities of how they would have said it, you know, and done it. So when they're putting that onto you, quite rightly, as you said, they're putting how they would feel in their position into it. And that's the key thing, is how they would feel. It's not how that person necessarily feels. And we need to also understand that sometimes people are capable of making that judgment call on what they think that person is feeling or needing or requiring at this time, versus what you think that they need. You know, someone else on the external says things that they perceive that they need. You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely.
It could be just a matter of some people read people better than others, really, more than anything else.
I think so. I think that a lot of times, especially, I mean, I have my moments of Aspergerism. You know, I can definitely tell there are times I'm just completely blank to what somebody's thinking. But most of the time when I'm actually sort of in helper mode, I'm actually looking at somebody saying, is there something I can do for you? I have a pretty good sense of their mental state, their emotional state, and I'm able to agree that you can read over the net. But I have a pretty good sense of what will move them forward. You know, we're kind of running out of time here, and I've got a couple other really important topics I want to cover with you. So let's go ahead and transition to this. I know we could chat about this forever. Maybe we'll bring you back on the show another time and we'll talk more about this after I answer all the email I'm going to get from today's show. So we'll see that comes out. I'm just already looking forward to the email from today's show. Anyway, so a couple of people in the chat room have been asking, what's your current activity? What are you doing day by day right now? And that's it. That's the question.
I work for Remu Hosting. They are a VPS supplier. We do servers, dedicated servers, VPSs, all that. It's a very interesting company, the way it's set up. It's not like there's no sales, there's no marketing, there's literally, when you email in, there's a bunch of sysadmins. That's it. There is no other people in the office, and everyone is equal. So there's no hierarchy. There's no. It's very different in regards to business. But basically, I fix servers. People will email and they'll say, "I've got this VPS. How do I set up an email client? How do I set up Apache? How do I configure the server? I need a Tomcat installed to set up. Or my database is completely corrupt or I've broken something." You know, IRM minus RF, everything. How do I fix it? And they email in and we basically grab emails and we take them and we fix it. And again, like what you're saying actually earlier kind of relates to this. It's to a certain degree, we need to know what they're trying to achieve, because sometimes people are not always very good at explaining what they actually want. What they think they want might not always be what they want. But the bonus of it is that there's always something really vastly different each time happening. It could be something as simple as, you know, fixing a DNS entry to, we've had some, I'm the crafter of shell scripts, which are paid as long, and they do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. So customers who, you know, oh, I actually went search mod and just screwed up the whole file system permissions. You know, I've written a shell script which can basically list all the file permissions off another server or computer of similar files, and we do backups so we can have a look at their backup image and just take a list of all the image permissions and files and replicate those through the other file system and, you know, just stuff like that. So each person on the team has the things that they're particularly good at or not good at. We've got a guy who's brilliant at databases. Some of the guys are really good at Tomcat, Java, JBoss. Everyone's generally fairly good at Apache and Postfix and all the regular stuff. I generally get thrown all the Plesk breakages, which are really nasty. WordPress stuff and shell scripts or automating things that would otherwise take a lot longer period of time. So I maintain also the blog, the work blog, and go to conferences and speak as well as all that, mostly because I enjoy doing it and I enjoy meeting people. So, yeah, there's no one job title other than Linux sysadmin that you get, because the work we do is so varied, from account queries to, well, I guess, sales, but we don't really we don't really sell with things. They generally sell themselves. There's no sales team.
Now, so wow, that long litany of things you're talking about, that's amazing. You do all that sort of stuff, but it's what you have to do in a small shop to be able to pull everything across. In that activity, are you mostly configuring, mostly helping, explaining, mostly scripting, or are you doing any heavy programming?
Well, we don't do development and programming at all. We're encouraged not to do that because it's quite time consuming and it's not something that we sell as a service. We do anything. I think we do mostly sysadmin, but then if we see something, and I mean, most of us are quite proficient at most basic understanding of programming and code. And I think once you understand one or two languages, the syntax is fairly obvious for most other things. Mm-hmm. And we've been known quite a few times to go through and look, I realize that you've just upgraded to PHP 5.3 and everything's broken. Look, I can see it's only two errors. I'll just go quickly and edit those files and just quickly fix your PHP for you or your code or whatever else you've got. And, you know, if it's a 5-second job and you can see it's obviously something quick and easy, we'll just go and do it. And it's no skin off our nose, but we're not going to re-go and reprogram your whole website or anything else like that. We're not going to do that. But I mean, I've been known to fix WordPress plugins and themes, and I do a lot of shell scripts. I get stuck with all the shell scripts. I think my biggest and most mammoth one is probably the WordPress upgrade script, which upgrades any WordPress installed on the server. It'll find it and upgrade them all.
Have you thought about learning a more advanced language like Python or Perl or something?
Oh, yeah, we do that. It's whatever. I'm more familiar with Bash personally. Mm-hmm. And for what we do majority of the time, that's actually fine. But I mean, I know Perl. I've done a bit of Perl before. I've not done any Python, but I am actually quite keen to try that and get into that. I mean, other than the basics of Python. I've done quite a bit of language. I do quite like Perl, but more often than not, I'm using shell commands and I'm automating stuff that's to do with more shell stuff, I guess, in regards to servers. If we were doing a lot of stuff that was more processing type stuff, I'd be more inclined to use, say, Perl or something else. But most of us know a language or two, or you know, and run a lot of stuff in our spare time.
Have you been able to get into this whole new DevOps area? Is that something that the words made it all the way to down under, or is it something you're looking at?
It's probably something I'm looking at more than anything else. I've done a lot of code fixes on, like, more often than not, you know, back in the old days, everyone compiled from scratch. That's what you did, particularly with Slackware. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, you know, quite often you'd find something's not compiling and you'd have to go in and hack the code a bit to make things work. And it was not exactly uncommon. So I've contributed a lot back to various places and various nicknames and whatever else to, you know, fix a lot of projects in that respect, but I've never actually stuck with any major projects that I can think of offhand anyway.
Okay. Just throwing it out there because I'm kind of wondering how small and medium shops take care of this. My current client's Media Temple, and we're doing a lot of what you're also doing, so sort of a competitor in that sense, but I'm always chatting with the CS reps in their IRC channel to find out if there's any questions I can answer for them as a technical guy to help them out with some of the questions. So I'm occasionally writing little Perl scripts to help them out when I'm distracted, not actually doing my main job, because my main job isn't anything to do with that.
So. We've got a development team at Remu Hosting, and they do custom programming stuff for people. That's kind of separate. They call it Two Parts Magic. Mm-hmm. And they are Java mostly, Tomcat. So they do Java development. Most of our stuff that is like a website is all done in Java on Tomcat. And mm-hmm. So yeah, the other dev team, they get the other end of the building, the crappy end. And
nice.
We have our little rivalries that we have, you know, but ultimately we all get along. And if someone's having a party, everyone will turn up, you know.
And just, again, we're running out of time, so I want to really make sure I cover this other topic. For me, it looked really important, the stuff you sent to me, and I'm actually sort of curious personally. So you've had an involvement with donating a kidney and having to lose weight to do that. You want to talk through the story for us?
I used to be horrendously overweight. I think about 150 kilograms, about 330 pounds. And my brother needed a kidney, and other people in our family are not viable due to distance, disabilities, everything else. And I said, sure, I'll do it. And so the only problem is I had to be under a certain BMI. And so I ended up, I spent about a year and I lost about 80 kilograms or 170 pounds.
Wow.
And then it still took another couple of years after that to get to the point of being able to donate a kidney, because they had to do all these tests and other things. And so then I donated him a kidney, and so that's done him quite well.
What kind of tips or tricks? How did you lose that weight? I have to lose about 20 kilos. It's turned to my doctor, which is just crazy.
I have a website because I get asked that a lot, honestly, by everyone in the supermarket. It's amazing how people recognize you. Even in a large city, they'll just like, hey, you've lost a lot of weight. I don't know who you are, but how did you do it? And so it's weight-loss.co.nz has pretty much all the information on there. And it's basically energy in, energy out. It's actually quite scientific. It's more than anything else. You can pretty much eat what you want as long as you're eating the right amount of, you know, less energy than you're using. So
my problem is most of the stuff I like to eat has a lot of calories. That's the biggest problem. Well, and most of the stuff I drink has a lot of calories.
I've regained a few kgs since I donated the kidney, I have to admit. But I'm still trying to keep active, and I do quite a bit of cycling as a sport. And that's pretty much what I do.
And then how's your brother?
He's doing really well. I think it's given him a lot more freedom. Before, he was tied to a machine. And so he's able to go out tramping and travel, and for him, it's been a life changer, absolute life changer, which is, I think, for me, that's the key thing. I mean, you're not going to say no when your brother asks you for a kidney, are you? You do what you can for your family. So to me, it wasn't really a thought process that went in it. It was just like, he's my brother, he needs a kidney. I've got two, have one, you know. He might have beaten me up a few times when I was a kid, but I've held it over his head a few times. It's like, how about they giving me that kidney back?
Now, I'm completely lost on geography, but are you anywhere near Jackson and that whole production stuff in New Zealand?
I think the Weta Works is in Wellington, which is the bottom of the North Island. So to give you a bit of perspective, Auckland is probably the biggest area in New Zealand, and that's it's probably three quarters of the way up the North Island. And that's probably the main area you'd come into New Zealand if you were coming to New Zealand. So Wellington is the bottom of the North Island. So I'm about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Auckland. So I'm closer to Auckland than I am Wellington. It's still within a day's drive, though, but small town, small countries.
Do you when you're having go to Linux user groups and things, are they from there coming in or not? Is that a different island?
Yeah. No, they have them. Depending, they have them all over. I often travel to Auckland for things, and often travel to Wellington as well for things. I do have Hobbiton around the corner from me, though. Hobbiton is just around the corner from me. They did the filming for that. It's about 30 minutes away.
Cool, cool, cool. And we've covered a lot of topics, but I'm just about out of time. Is there anything you wanted to tell our audience before we let you go?
No, I can't think of anything. If anyone's got any questions they want to ask, I'm happy to answer them. I think my website there should have a link to my Google Plus, which is probably the best place to get me. Otherwise, yeah, that's about it.
And for those that aren't seeing it on the video, that's lizquilty.com, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, lizquilty.com.
Yeah, about half of our audience is just audio only, so we have to pay attention to that every once in a while. So there we go.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Randy, any last questions for Liz?
I got nothing.
Okay, well, that wraps that up. Okay, so Liz, thank you very much for coming on the show. You've again raised some interesting thoughts about issues that affect all of us in some way or another, especially the issues around having women present and full members of our open source societies. And I appreciate you being with your candor speaking about that.
Awesome. Thank you very much for being awesome.
What could I say to that? Thank you. That was Emacs or VI.
And thanks, Randy, for being awesome. Yeah, what's that?
Emacs or VI? I forgot to ask that.
Oh, come on. It's VI. Vim.
That's my girl. Sorry.
Vim. When you've got a floppy disk and you've got to boot off that and you've got to make a custom OS completely for this new hardware and you've got BusyBox on that floppy disk, what comes with it? Do you think Emacs comes with that? No, it's Vim.
It would never fit. It would never
You're installing an OS. You don't need to install Emacs too. That's another OS by itself, isn't it?
Exactly.
You guys are ganging up on me. That's not fair. Not fair. That's I'm the host.
My boss likes Emacs.
All right, guys. Well, that was Liz Quilty speaking to us from New Zealand. Great conversation. What do you think, Randy?
Oh, it's awesome. I was so glad talking to her that we got her on the show. I mean, I've been looking forward to this for a while.
Very good. Very good. Well, that was a brief response. Okay. You didn't give me enough time to bring up my spreadsheet. Darn it, that's supposed to be the place where I bring up my spreadsheet so I know what the upcoming guests look like. And then you just immediately ended that. Oh, well. As we say, we do this show live. We really do this live to tape. So, what I liked actually about the conversation again is, again, a perspective that seems a bit more, can I say this without getting inflamed? There's nothing I can do here that's not going to get inflamed, but it seems a bit more balanced than some of the complainants I've heard about this issue. And I appreciate it when people can kind of give a common sense answer and that maybe it's not all the guy's fault when something goes wrong with this stuff, that maybe there's a lot of things to take into consideration, culture, distance, things like that. So I'm glad you're able to get to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of girls out there, you know, feel the same way, but they're usually the ones that are quiet about it. It's always the loud ones that you hear complaining. So, you know.
That's always true, though. I mean, the squeaky wheel gets heard. That's not what the phrase is, but it doesn't matter because I'm going on to the upcoming guests. So we have a number of people coming up on the upcoming shows. In fact, we're pretty much solidly booked all the way through the end of Q2, which is really nice. I was like empty 3 weeks ago. So I have been working hard behind the scenes, typing away madly, trying to invite people for the show to come up. Next week, we have Citadel, which is a groupware application, allows you to have all sorts of management of workflow and communications and interactions with people in groupware stuff. We have Spree Commerce, which is about online store management. So basically shopping cart management, things like that, online stuff. OpenShift just added this, I believe. I don't think it was the last time I talked about this, which is free auto-scaling platform as a service from Red Hat. So basically hosting your application in the clouds for free. How do they do that? How do they do free? I don't understand. There must be some hook. We'll have to ask them when they come on the show. Also just added to the guest list, we have somebody from the Gentoo project. You can't believe that I've gone 207 shows without having anybody from Gentoo. So they're going to talk about the Gentoo flavor of Linux and how that differs from the rest of the distributions and what their philosophies are and history and all the usual things we talk about with the project. That's going to be really great. We've talked a lot about the Apache Software Foundation, but only indirectly on the show. Like a lot of the projects we have brought on recently have said, well, we're a member of the Apache Software Foundation. So I actually have somebody from the Apache Software Foundation coming in. It's none other than Jim, I'm going to mispronounce this, Jim Jagielski. Okay, sorry. You'll fix it when you come in, I'm sure. Okay, and following that, Livevert, which is virtual virtualization, being able to talk to KVMs and VirtualBox, VMware and stuff using a uniform interface, really handy for some of the stuff we've been talking about recently in terms of all the cloud stuff. LibreOffice, we got them rescheduled. They're going to come back in. That's the fork of OpenOffice that was made when Sun sort of took over OpenOffice and started being a little weird about it. So LibreOffice was the fork from that. Still a very active project, though. Wrapping up Q2, we'll have Excito, which, according to my notes, is a home media server. So it's the software that sits on the server, but their business model is to actually sell it as a box that you can just throw in your network somewhere, and it becomes a media server for your activity. Lots of other people on the short list. Go to twit.tv/floss. There's a spreadsheet linked from there called Upcoming Guests. You can go and see who we have that we're talking to, at least. And if you have a project that isn't on that list, or a person like a person that's really interesting to talk to about open source, also not on that list, please have them email me, Merlin@stonehenge.com, and I will work my butt off. Can I say butt? I guess not. Well, anyway, I can work my tail off to be able to put them on the show. I try to get all these guests. I do about a quarter at a time, so you'll probably hear me coming up soon. Got on my list here. We have you can follow us on Google Plus. We have a Floss Weekly page on Google Plus. We have a Floss Weekly page or Twitter handle and Identica handle. Floss Weekly, all one word. Okay. And let's see. Oh, I keep losing my notes over here. Darn it. Where's my head there? Okay, we have a live chat room. You might have heard this talk about this a couple times. I've taken questions from the chat room today. If you go to live.twit.tv during our taping times, which is 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, U.S., so that depends on daylight savings time and stuff as to what offset it is from you. You can actually go there and chat with us, and we take questions from there. You can follow me as well. I'm Randall Schwartz on Google+. That's probably my primary place I'm putting stuff there. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, and you name it. You can find me all over the place. Merlin on Twitter, Merlin on Merlin on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Merlin. But mostly just for Randall Schwartz on Google+. That's really where my live stuff is going mostly. Just a little news about me. I just got reelected to the Squeak Oversight Board for the fifth year in a row. So I am still responsible for the Squeak small talk system and guiding it in terms of the community response. I'm also podcasting the Squeak News once again. We're finally getting that all revived. So we have if you look for the small talk podcast, you'll hear my voice every week on that. I'll be in Portland on May 20th looking at the solar eclipse. That'll be a lot of fun. Apparently, it's a partial solar eclipse only from the Pacific Northwest. So I'm actually taking time off from SoCal and going up to Oregon again. I'm also going to be in New York City May 24th, 25th, and 26th. Watch my Twitter handle and watch all that stuff to figure out where I'm going to be. I don't have all the plans finalized for that yet, but it's probably going to include some evening at the Peculiar Pub if you're familiar with New York. Almost certainly there. I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, June 12th through 16th for the YAPSE Northwest, the Internet of the Pearl Conference Northwest. I'm teaching a class there, and I'm mostly just hanging out there as well, hanging on to stuff. That's all the plugging I want to do right now. Randy, what do you want to plug today?
Well, I'm going to be speaking at OzCon for the first time ever. I've never actually been to OzCon before, which I know is kind of amazing. But I'm going to be speaking there with Mitch Garnett from, I think he wrote Bodo in Python. It's an AWS library. Mm. So we're going to be talking about building a SaaS SDK in the cloud, like building to scale. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to be speaking at BSDCon coming up, and that's going to be in just a couple weeks.
Cool. And I mentioned briefly at the beginning of the show that I was going to ask you about this. Hopefully you're still prepared. FreeBSD 8.3 just came out. And I'm curious, why did 8.3 come out when we already had 9.0 come out? What's up with that?
So this is a normal thing. 9.0 is still a .0 release. So 8.3 is a maintenance release. It's mostly about new device drivers rather than new OS features. So we have new hardware coming out all the time. We need incremental updates that add support for them. And a lot of sites that are appliance vendors or large deployments, they aren't comfortable upgrading to a .0 release, which is perfectly understandable. So it allows them to update without necessarily performing like a major OS update.
Okay. So it does make sense. In fact, actually, I'm saying on a practical basis, I actually have a my main client, my second main client anyway, is on 8.2 in all of our boxes. And we were looking at the 9.0 rollover, and I didn't want to break anything. And I hate going to a .0 because it almost always breaks things. So I'm kind of happy about this 8.3, but now it gives me, I've got five machines now. I got to upgrade to 8.3 at some time over the next few weeks. So that's going to be sort of fun as well. But thanks for clarifying that. Anything else you want to say before we let our audience go?
Nope, that's all I got.
Great.
Well, it's
Randy,
early.
It's so good to have you back. I'm glad we were finally able to work out a schedule that works for you to bring you back on the show, and I'm hoping to see you a little bit more often coming up in the near future and maybe even taking your hand at hosting. All the other co-hosts have had their chance at hosting now, so about time. For those who get to the video, just grimaced. So I don't know if that's going to go very far, but we can give it a go.
This is enough work. I'll let you stay the host of this. I don't need to do that, no.
All righty then. Well, having said all that, we're going to say what we say every time at this point of the show. We'll see you again next week on Floss Weekly.